This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Election Eve edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, pollster Scott Rasmussen provides a final look at the polls going into tomorrow's election. Also, what happens when the state attorney general refuses to do his job and protect religious liberty laws? Well, in Mississippi, the governor steps in. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant is here to explain. And speaking of governors, North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory gives us an update from the super battleground state of North Carolina, where the values bus continues to roll down the roads. We'll be talking about that here on Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. I do hope, folks, and we're going to talk about this, that you have put it into your day timer. You have made your plans. You are gearing up. You've laid out your day for tomorrow so that you will be voting, all right? Important day tomorrow. Could be one of the most important days in modern history for this country, and that's not hyperbole. All right, the website, again, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you on the website. All right, we're moving into Election Day tomorrow. Lots of polls over the last 18 months. And we've seen the race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton tightening. Some of these states that were in one column are now switching to undecided and, you know, all kinds of things happening. Well, joining us now is a man who knows a lot about the polls and reading these pre-election trends is Scott Rasmussen. He's a regular here. Love to hear what he has to say. He is with the Rasmussen Media Group and a senior fellow at King's College. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you the night before an election, and I got to tell you, I'm ready to be done reading the polls and hearing the pundits, and looking forward to having some actual votes to work with.
Well, you have about 24 hours, and you're going to have lots of votes to work with. You know, and give us your sense as we're going into how. First off, I want to ask you a prediction, and not about the outcome, but how accurate you think the polls will be in determining. When we look back on this, let's say Wednesday morning?
I think the polls will be within about 3 points of the national average, one way or the other. In 2012, the polls underestimated the Democratic victory by about 3 points. In 2014, they underestimated the Republican Senate victory by about 3 or 4 points on average. And I think the other thing that will be generally accurate is the polls will show us which states were closest and most competitive and which ones weren't. Having said that, there's about 14 states that fall well within that 3-point range in either direction. The odds are favoring Hillary Clinton. She clearly has the edge at the moment. But it is not so close that a 3-point swing couldn't change that. And if there is a change, if there is a surprise, it will come not because the polls misestimated how people plan to vote. It will come because of turnout estimates that turned out to be wrong.
And that's why we see the candidates, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I mean, they're almost crisscrossing in the air as they're rushing from one state to another. I mean, they are basically around the clock here for the 72 hours going into the election, holding rallies. It's because so many of these states are on the bubble in terms of which way they're going to go.
That's right. I mean, you see a couple of things. The Clinton campaign going back to Michigan because there's concern about the African-American vote in the Detroit area, and that's also a concern they have in the Cleveland area for Ohio. You see Donald Trump going to Minnesota, which I never expected a Republican presidential candidate to go to, and Michigan. And I think what he's trying to do there is to enlarge the white working class vote. There are some signs. The Des Moines Register poll this weekend, which has a very good track record, showed that maybe the turnout is going to be more favorable in that region for Donald Trump than we expected.
Interesting. You're listening to Washington Watch, my guest, Scott Rasmussen, discussing this snapshot, final snapshot of polling going into tomorrow's election. Scott, let me ask you this. When, as we talked about this last 72 hours, voter turnout, big effort, our values team on the ground in North Carolina going door to door. I mean, it's really a ground game at this point. How much impact do these last minute pushes, like flying to North Carolina, then to Minnesota, you know, and all this, how big of an impact does that actually have on turnout?
The overall impact is modest. But when you have a race, especially like in North Carolina, that is very close and it is historically very close, even a small impact can be decisive, and that's why they're doing it. You're looking first off at the ground game, and those final visits combined maybe can get to a point or two extra in the polls. But when you've got Richard Burr up for re-election in the U.S. Senate, Pat McCrory up for re-election as governor, and then you've got the critical electoral college votes in North Carolina at stake, it is worth making every effort to try and push people over the top there.
Okay, you said that Hillary has a slight advantage going into this the home stretch here for tomorrow's election. Is there any sense that Donald Trump could be under-polling? I mean, when you look at his events, like yesterday, I was talking with Michelle Bachmann, was with him in Minnesota, 17,000 people turn out there at the airport, short notice, same thing in North Carolina. I mean, he's getting these huge crowds, which really in many ways just eclipse what Hillary Clinton has gotten. Is there some possibility of that?
Yes, and again, I think first of all, it's not a conspiracy. It's not something the pollsters are trying to hide. And second of all, it is not a massive number that is going to lead to a landslide. But if that enthusiasm translates to a slightly larger share of the vote, it can have a big impact. And that's really what I was saying at the beginning. The Des Moines Register poll I mentioned, for example, showed that young people in Iowa are less likely to turn out to vote than they did 4 years ago. Not only that, it showed that whereas Barack Obama won the young people by a huge margin, it was pretty much a toss-up in Iowa, or very close to it. The reason was Bernie Sanders voters were not bothering to show up in the election in Iowa. If that happens, if the Sanders voters stay home in larger amounts than we expect, and if this enthusiasm translates to some extra points for Donald Trump, then you do have the makings of an upset. But again, we're not talking about if a poll show Hillary Clinton, as they do now, up by 3 points nationally, we are not going to see a landslide for Donald Trump. We might, if things break very well for him and if that turnout is there, see a narrow victory.
Hmm. Well, let's talk, Scott Rasmussen, let's talk about the United States Senate. That appears to be on the bubble as well as to where that could come down. What do you see happening there in terms of the United States Senate and who will control it come post-election tomorrow?
A lot of very close races there. Republicans are expected to lose a seat in Illinois. It's looking more and more like Pat Toomey will be defeated in Pennsylvania. The Republicans' only shot for a pickup this cycle is in Nevada. That's not looking very promising. On the brighter side for Republicans, a lot of reason to believe they're going to hang on to the Indiana Senate seat, despite the recruiting of Evan Bayh by the Democrats. There's also persistent rumblings that Ron Johnson in Wisconsin might shock everybody and keep his job. He's been one of the people all year that we listed as one of the most vulnerable senators. When you put that all together, and by the way, Marco Rubio looks like he's going to do okay. I think the Republicans will hang on. Blunt will win in Missouri. We're in a situation where the control of the Senate could come down to just a couple of races. Perhaps the most decisive is Kelly Ayotte and Hassan up in New Hampshire. And if Ayotte is able to pull off a victory there, it's conceivable the Republicans could hang on to control. If I had to bet right now today, and I'm not a betting man, but if I had to, I would say it's either a 50-50 Senate or perhaps 51-49 for the Democrats when all the votes are counted. But so many close races, it's difficult to be precise on that.
Well, let's say it's 50-50, that makes the presidential race even more important because then the vice president becomes the tie-breaking vote in the United States Senate.
Well, and it does something else, and this is one of the flukes of the process. If we were to end up in a 50-50 tie, obviously the vice president cast the deciding vote. And if Hillary Clinton was elected president and Tim Kaine is casting that deciding vote, the governor gets to appoint an interim, but Virginia would have a Senate election.
Oh, I think we may have, I think we lost him. Well, you got to stay on the edge of your seat to find out what the senator might do in terms of appointing a new member. So, yeah, it is, it's close, folks. That's close. I was actually at an event in my home state of Louisiana earlier today with Ted Cruz and John Fleming, you know, all about voter turnout, encouraging people to be informed and be voting. Now, of course, most people, I would think, that are turning out to these last-minute rallies, a lot of them have already voted. But it's not just about you voting. It's about, you know, on our side, what conservatives, we get lots of friends to vote. You know, the other side, they tend to just vote multiple times themselves. We don't advocate for that. It's illegal, all right? But you can call friends, you can call family, you can post things on your social media. And again, I've been talking about this all along. We've got these resources online at TonyPerkins.com that you can use. We got Scott back online. All right, Scott, you left us on the edge of our chair with what might happen with Tim Kaine if he is elected to the position of vice president.
If Tim Kaine becomes vice president, he would cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate for a short period of time. He would obviously leave the Senate. The governor of Virginia would appoint a Democratic replacement, but it's only an interim appointment. And next year, in 2017, the voters in Virginia would have a special election for governor, for Senate, that would determine all by itself control of the U.S. Senate. And it would probably be one of the most intense and expensive Senate campaigns of all time. And I think what that really spells is a period of ongoing turmoil. If you have that situation where Clinton is the new president, there will clearly still be questions about some of the email and foundation issues, and you have a tie Senate and a special election going on in Virginia. And it would probably mean that this sense that we're in right now, that this election won't go away, would continue for another year.
So it's the election that never ends.
Right.
And you know, Scott, we're up against a break, but we really are. When you look at these election results and you just describe what that we may be looking at in the United States Senate, we really are a divided nation. Ideologically, we're divided.
Very much politically. There are teams. You know, there's studies that say that when we look at things, we only see 40% with our eyes. The other 60% we fill in with what we expect to see. And politically, we fill in entirely different pictures of what's happening in this country.
Wow. Scott, always great to talk with you. I'm sure we'll be talking post-election to get your analysis as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Look forward to talking again.
All right, Scott Rasmussen. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, folks, your vote could make a difference, literally. There are races that are decided by a handful of votes. You could be one of them. Make sure you are planning to vote if you've not already done so. All right, don't go away. When we come back, who's going to defend religious liberty in the state of Mississippi? It's all for Governor Phil Bryant next.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
The gay agenda, Islam, liberation theology, aggressive socialism. You ask yourself, how should I respond to these attacks on my Christian faith? How can I share Christ in a sinful culture? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. An online Master of Arts in Apologetics from WBS will prepare you to defend and share your faith in an increasingly hostile world. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning challenge culture. WBS.edu.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, one day away from the election. And if you've not yet voted, I do hope you're making your plans now, planning your day around voting. Next to your quiet time and prayer, voting will be the next most important thing you do tomorrow. Well, maybe third. You need to kiss your wife if you're married on the way out. Okay. Earlier this year, Mississippi passed the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, which simply protects citizens from the government when it comes to issues of religion and conscience. Specifically, this involves the issue of marriage, how government has become like a club for the left to use against those who want to live according to their orthodox Christian faith. Well, not surprisingly, the anti-religious freedom left, yes, that's right, has attacked the law in court. But the state attorney general, who is, his job is to defend the laws, is refusing to defend it. But it's not going undefended in the state of Mississippi. Governor Phil Bryant is defending it, and he joins us now here on Washington Watch. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, so good to be with you this day before Election Day.
It is, and in fact, I want to talk about that for a moment because you spent the weekend. I think you were in Florida, and were you in? You were up
in
northeast
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Of course, you know, as I remind folks, there are a lot of good conservatives in Pennsylvania. I met a lot of them that are there working for the Trump campaign, and they are fired up.
Now,
and,
did you have to have an interpreter?
Ready to get to work.
Did you have to have an interpreter up there? I know they don't know how to
understand
us.
No, you know, once we got past this language barrier, it worked out well. I had Rick Perry with me and Governor Huckabee. So you can imagine there's a boy from
Well, the three amigos.
The three amigos. The SEC was well represented there in Pennsylvania on Saturday and worked hard in Florida, in Tampa area. On Friday, as you know, those are battleground states, and one that, particularly in Pennsylvania, that if we were to win it tomorrow night, I think you would see a reshuffling fairly quickly of the electoral map. And as I told them, I would look forward to seeing Wolf Blitzer on CNN wince in pain as he would have to announce that Donald J. Trump apparently had won Pennsylvania. It would be worth all that work last Saturday just to be able to see that, and we hope that it does come true. Because, you know, Tony, this is not only a campaign between two individuals, but a campaign of political agendas.
Right.
You've got one secular progressive agenda, one agenda that says their candidate says that partial birth abortion is fine right up to the day of birth. Partial birth abortion would be fine, she says, right up to the day of birth. She says we need to look again at our Second Amendment rights and determine whether or not, even though the Constitution claims that we have, whether or not we have rights to keep and bear arms. You know, the topic that we fought for, religious freedoms, religious freedom now is believed to be a bigotry. And so,
yeah, the Civil Rights Commission, U.S. Civil Rights Commission, said this as
well. That's right. They did, appointed by Barack Obama, the chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, says if you believe in religious freedom, it's just a code word for bigotry.
Yeah.
And so this is the way the Democratic Party believes. So the people who are there saying, well, you know, I just vote because I like the way their candidate expresses herself, or I'm a woman, she's a woman, and you're continuing to say, I believe in the right to life, and I believe in traditional marriage, and I believe in religious freedoms, and I believe in the Second Amendment. It's inconsistent to be able to do those two things, believe in all of that, and vote for Hillary Clinton, who will, if elected, select the next two and possibly three Supreme Court justices.
Well, Governor, I want to talk about the religious liberty law there in Mississippi that you are now having to defend. But first, I want to go back to Pennsylvania for a moment, where you spent the weekend, and that as you said, that's a traditionally Democratic state, labor, a lot of stuff like, you know, that keeps it in kind of the Democratic column. However, Donald Trump has made inroads there because of the coal, because of the really leftist, radical social agenda that the Democratic Party has embraced. Anecdotally, what did you see on the ground there in Pennsylvania?
Well, the level of enthusiasm is amazing. We got into Pennsylvania near Harrisburg at a very late hour, rose early the next day. It was 8:15 their time when we had the first rally on Saturday morning in a little community just outside of Harrisburg. And I said, well, this shouldn't take long because I'm sure it'll be a dozen people. We got there, and I would say there were 200 at 8:15 on a Saturday morning gathered together, including the local sheriff, who is a wonderful lady, tough as nails, Republican, who told us certainly that Pennsylvania believed as many of us do. They are worried about their economic security. They're worried about the borders. They, like many states, they've seen a tremendous influx of Hispanics and others that come into the state and oftentimes take jobs in areas where Pennsylvanians had once worked. But they're also people of faith. I mean, if people who believe in religious freedoms, as I would go about talking about them, and surprisingly, and Tony, thanks to the kindness that you've shown and others, the Heritage Foundation and others, they seem to know that the governor of the state of Mississippi has stood in a tremendous battle fighting for our religious freedoms, and they respect that. They are pro-life. They are certainly Second Amendment supporters there in Pennsylvania. Yeah, not too different than we are. If you go into, of course, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, you might find a different demographic and a different political ideology. But the state, the hardworking people in the state of Pennsylvania who have worked in the energy segment for generations are going to get out and vote for Donald Trump.
I think I've seen the same thing around the country. I mean, there are conservatives everywhere And they're getting a voice in this election. Governor, we're out of time. I'm going to have to get you back on later to talk about how you're having to do the Attorney General's job as well as your own.
Well, he said we had duped church-going people, and he just could not stand with us. So there you have summed up quickly, unfortunately, what our Attorney General's opinion happens to be of me, and I think of this law.
All right. Governor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for what you're doing. God bless you.
All right. Thanks so much. Don't go away, folks. We're right back after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Obviously, the story of the week's going to be the election. That's what everybody is waiting for. And it's very interesting to see the reactions that are coming out of the markets even as we speak. We're looking at what is called a Hillary Clinton relief rally for stocks. I find this so amazing. But we have just had 9 straight sessions of losses. That's the longest losing streak. I know this is hard to believe because we've been through such volatile times, but that is the longest losing streak in more than 30 years. But this week, they are expecting a spectacular rebound. Why? Because it's looking more with the FBI not pursuing charges against Hillary Clinton, like we are going to have a relief rally, because there are many on Wall Street that still believe larger government, more government intrusion, more debt created by this government, and frankly, just more of the same of Obamanomics is going to be good in the long run for the economy. Let me tell you what it's going to be good for. It's going to be good for the markets. And all they care about is the markets. They don't care how they get higher. They only care that they go higher. And that is the problem, and it's going to remain the problem. Gold is sinking lower as a result of these new FBI investigation turnarounds. Gold seems to be getting it right. Gold is slipping as their concerns for a Clinton presidency and more of the same weighs on the commodity.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon, day before the election. Again, I encourage you, make plans now to vote if you have not already done so. If you need help, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Help voting, that is. Go to TonyPerkins.com. We have resources there for you, resources you can share with family and friends. Do not underestimate your influence. As a Washington Watch listener, you are an influencer. So make sure you encourage others to go and vote. Number of critical states, as I mentioned, the values bus, the FRC Action Values bus, continues to roll through the Tar Heel State, hitting all 100 counties this weekend. Not all this weekend, but over the course of the month, we have made it to all 100, finishing that this weekend. And this has become a super battleground state. And joining me now with the latest is the governor of North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony, for having me. It's a busy, busy day and going to be busy tomorrow. We just hope the turnout's good for our side. And it looks like right now the turnout numbers and early voting are very good for North Carolina. We've got an increased number of people voting, but a decreased number of overall Democrats. And that's a good sign for us. But it's
you've got the wire. North Carolina's got a great story. I mean, since you became governor and Republican legislature, you've cut unemployment almost in half. You've taken a deficit of $300 million, turned it into a $400 million surplus. I mean, that sounds like a story that should be celebrated, and it seems like you should be cruising into a second term.
Well, we should be, but the left-wing elite liberals have poured in millions upon millions of dollars in North Carolina. I think it's directly tied to Hillary's campaign, and they want to take the governor of the Republican governor of the 9th largest state out. And so what they're doing is trying to divert attention away from this economic success and the education success we had, and divert it to social issues, which I happen to disagree with them on. And they want to do everything to divert the attention away from our great economic success from from changing the definition of gender, which you and I have talked about, to photo ID being discriminatory, which, you know, is allowed in 33 other states, including Barack Obama's own Illinois and Chicago, where he has to show a voter photo ID to vote in North Carolina. But they've got the national media in their pocket, too. So we're fighting the media elite, the corporate elite, the athletic elite, the entertainment elite, and we're still going to win.
And Governor, you talk about the media elite who has, you know, clearly an agenda. Today, Donald Trump was in North Carolina. I think you were there at the event. And Donald Trump doesn't hesitate to call out the media and how they fail to report accurately what is taking place. What was the turnout there for that event?
Oh, it was still. They had an arena of probably 7,000-8,000 people there. Very nice turnout and very strong enthusiasm. I think what we're seeing in this remaining last 2 weeks, we're seeing Clinton fatigue. And I'm saying Clinton, both Bill and Hillary. I think people don't want the 90s to return. And I think that's exactly what we'll have. The heck with the FBI investigation. I think we're just having Clinton fatigue. Oh, here we go again. And I think that means there's no enthusiasm for him. They might be in favor of him, but they're not committed to him like they were Barack Obama. And then the second thing we're seeing is Obamacare is having a tremendous negative impact in North Carolina. You know, kind of downplayed the media 3 weeks ago, but our premiums in North Carolina are getting hit terribly, 30-40% premium increases. Heck, if you want your own health insurance now anywhere, it's going to cost you $20,000 a year. That means you have to make $35,000 a year to pay for your insurance alone. And that's probably with a $10,000 deductible. And this is the disaster of Obamacare, so I think that's helped us a lot. The media doesn't want to talk about that.
That's right.
I think the last 2 or 3 days, the media stopped talking about any issues and just talk about process and politics and who's getting out the vote.
Well, Governor McCrory, I know you have been around the state. You've been dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew, helping folks get back into their homes, get their homes cleaned out, and all of those issues. I know you've been on the road nonstop. Your sense, are voters connecting those dots? You just talked about health care, you talked about Obamacare, you talked about all these different issues. Are people beginning to connect the dots and seeing what is attached to each of these parties and their agendas?
We're about to find out. I'm about to find out, as you and I have talked about, if there is a silent majority still in our country, or are the people that are going to win are those who shout the loudest and protest the loudest and at times are self-righteous, and that's the elite. And, you know, the people who protest in front of my executive mansion, you know, are those the people that now control the majority, or is there a silent majority of people with good values, strong economic common sense, people who believe in good education, but education that's efficient, effective, and an education that'll get us a job, or are we gonna just hear from the liberal elite who coordinate protests, who want higher taxes, who have class warfare, who at times sadly want racial warfare, and bring up that card an awful lot. I mean, the president a week ago was just attacking me like I've never seen before. And, you know, frankly, we're going to find out if our country is going to be controlled by those who show up.
Yeah.
Or is it going to be controlled by those who control the elite media, the elite corporate suite, the elite entertainment? This is going to be, I think, the election.
And I think
North Carolina's the battleground.
And I think the reason it is the battleground, I think the reason you're the target is because you show how conservatives can effectively govern and not sell out voters on issues of principle. Governor, thanks so much for being with us.
Get out to vote. If you haven't voted in North Carolina, tomorrow's the last day.
All right, we're going to encourage folks. We're knocking on doors there, Governor. We're going to continue to do
that.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be open up the phone lines here shortly. Big day tomorrow. I do hope that you are planning to vote in this all-important election. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of 6, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
All right, we're back here on Washington Watch, day before the election. All right, here's what I want to talk about, okay? I just want to get a sense from this, 866-372-7234. But before you dial, here's the question. I want to know, did your pastor encourage you to vote yesterday? Or pastors, did you encourage your folks to vote? I preached yesterday, and the title of the message was An Appeal to Heaven. It was an election day message. I tell you what, it was really great. We had probably 70 candidates and elected officials that came to our church from all across the state, statewide elected officials. We had most of the candidates for the U.S. Senate, Congress, state or local races, school board, city council, mayor. The message was real simple. Luke chapter 18, where Jesus tells men that they ought to pray and not lose heart. And it's a story of the widow. You probably recall the story, the widow who is pounding on the unjust judge, the modern-day equivalent of a politician, who had no fear of God nor respect for man. But because she was so persistent, he finally, even though he didn't fear God nor respect man, gave in and gave her the justice she was looking for. And Jesus said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And the idea was, here is what we're called to do is pray to our Heavenly Father, appeal to heaven, but also in this parable is embrace the idea of action. So we're to appeal to heaven, but act here on this earth. And so obviously in that message, I encouraged our folks to get out and vote. Didn't tell them how to vote, other than intelligently and informed. But I think there's a lack in our churches, I believe, of encouraging our people to engage in their Christian citizenship here on this earth. And I think it's fundamental. If we want righteous government, you have to have righteous people in there. And how do righteous people get in? They get in with people who have a righteous nature. Okay? That's how we do it. And I will say, I've gotten a number of messages from pastors across the country that, in fact, preached very good messages. Jim Garlow, my friend out in San Diego, Pastor Jack Hibbs in California, in Chino Hills, California, Jacob Aranza in my home state of Louisiana. And so I've gotten a lot of these messages. And I know many pastors are doing it. And to you pastors who are, I commend you, I thank you for equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. And folks, if your pastor did, and we're going to go to the phone lines first, so Mark, hold on, I'm coming to you first in Virginia. But let me encourage you to do this. If your pastor did and does, thank him. In fact, send him a note, mail him. You'd be surprised the impact that a handwritten card says will do to a pastor in reinforcing that type of message from the pulpit. All right, don't just assume that somebody else is going to do it. 866-372-7234, going to Virginia where Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Pleasure to talk to you again. Yes, first of all, I go to Swift Creek Baptist in Midlothian, Virginia, and our pastor did encourage us to vote. A couple things. He encouraged us to vote biblical values.
Very good.
Not specifically for a candidate, but he also pointed out that we're always choosing between the lesser of two evils. We are all sinful, fallen human beings, except for the grace of our Lord Jesus. So unless Jesus is on the ballot, we are voting for a fallen person.
That's a very good point.
Who's on the ballot?
That's a very good point. There's always going to be, because we all have an evil nature. We may be redeemed and in the process of sanctification, but we still have an evil nature until we've been glorified and are in our eternal state of being. So, good point, Mark. That's good. Thanks so much for calling and being sure and encourage your pastor. All right, let's go to Texas, other side of the country, to Carol. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yes, my pastor encouraged us to vote. He also, his sermon was on basically what would God want us to do, who would he want us to consider as the person that we would vote for, and does that person, not just the person, but also the party, do they reflect biblical values? Do they reflect the things that are important to Christians?
Absolutely. And that's that is it's clearly within the rights of the pastor and the pulpit to do that. In fact, not only right, I think they're obligated under their mantle as a pastor leading a flock as the shepherd. They should help people understand that in pointing out the party platforms and what the parties stand for. Is not about a candidate, but it's about these values, biblical values, as you mentioned, life, marriage, religious liberty, and then measure the candidates according to that standard. That is the standard. That's the benchmark. And sometimes, as I've said before, it comes down to a point that you have to vote for the one that you think will do the least amount of damage to those freedoms or those values. It may not be clearly aligned, but you select the one that is least likely to harm those values. Carol, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Oklahoma, where Brad is on the line. Brad, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, Tony.
So did your pastor talk about it this weekend?
Yes, sir. Yes, he did. And he encouraged everybody to vote as Christians, and he sounded just like you guys. Sounded very well. And I pray for American Family Radio and you and everybody associated in Israel every day now. I've been listening for 1 year, and I get 5 hours a day because I drive every day at work. And so I listen to preaching, everything you guys do, and it does transfer. And I really do thank you guys and appreciate it. We really do make a big change in everybody's heart, especially mine, and I do thank you.
And, well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. I really do. And I am grateful for that and grateful for the pastors that, I mean, my line here, my lines are all lit up with people across the country saying that their pastors are telling them yes to go and vote. And that's encouraging. And I know I hear from time to time, I get people say, you know, I could never get my pastor to talk about these things and not even acknowledge that we have an election. And, you know, my response is, look, go talk to him, sit down, have a conversation with him. Maybe it's a lack of information. Maybe he needs resources like Washington Watch, Family Research Council, and there are others out there. Happy to help them. You know, introduce him to the material first. You know, like you say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But at least, you know, let him know that that's available. Now, in the end, if a church and a pastor refuses and just simply says, I don't want to get involved in that, I don't want to do that, I believe that's a part of equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. And if a pastor, as a shepherd, is refusing to do that, well, quite frankly, you might just need to look for a different church. Because I think it is a part of our Christian citizenship to be engaged in the culture. Not focused solely, exclusively, or predominantly on that aspect, but it has to be a part of the ministry of the church. Just as missions, as being involved in the schools, being all these things. We've got to be involved in our communities. Brad, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Virginia, where Chris is on the line. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. I'm Catholic, and a priest didn't say anything in his homily on Sunday, but when we pray for people who are ill in our parish, and at the end they had added on the news to please, you know, make sure everybody votes and vote your biblical values. It was the same thing, you know, I hear on your program. And also a friend and I, we did this on our own, and we just went out during masses, other masses, church services, and stuffed voter guides in the door handles of cars so that when people got in their car, there was the voter guide so they would know what to do. So,
well, thank you.
We Catholics are busy.
Well, I know, and thank you, Chris, for taking the initiative to do that and help inform your fellow congregants about what's on the ballot and what's important. And I guess it's fitting to put in the part about voting with the prayer for the sick, because our nation is sick. And while voting is not going to fix everything that ails us, because our ailment is spiritual and moral rather than political, it is a part of working our way back to health. Chris, thanks so much for listening and for caring about our country and your community. Let's go to Sonia in Texas. Sonia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for your radio station. I just love it. And I'm a senior, so I live alone. I have my two dogs. And when I went to church, I was really excited, you know, about hearing about their values and what they thought about the election, and I even asked them, and they just kind of turned away from me and said, we don't like to get into politics, and it just, my heart just kind of dropped, and I came home, and I haven't been back, and I think I'm going to try to find somewhere where they get enthusiastic about the Lord, but
well,
y'all do, so y'all just don't know how much you mean to me, because I don't get a chance to talk about the Lord like I would like to. Now, I do make chances when I get them at the grocery store, at the doctor's office today. You know, I don't try to push anything on anyone, but I just say, oh, well, no, voting's coming up. I hope you're going to vote, something like that, lighthearted, and see what type of response I get and if they would like to talk about it. But it just means so much that I can cut on your station, and I know that it's going to fill my heart up.
Well, thank you, Sonia, and thank you for, you know, just prompting people and reminding them by having those conversations. That's what we're called to do, is just have conversations with people and prompt them to think through this. And I tell you what, if you'll do this, Sonia, if you have access to email, if you want to email me, tony@tonyperkins.com, and we'll find out what part of Texas you're in, we might be able to connect you with a church out there in that area that, you know, is more in line with helping Christians fulfill all aspects of ministry. So, Sonia, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. Let's go to Alabama, where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I go to a full gospel church, evangelistic. We operate in all of the gifts. I'm an 85-year-old saint with a mindset of the man who asked for bread at midnight and a mindset of the defenseless widow. And I want you to tell the people that we're all going to be judged by God, every one of us. If he sees the precious blood of Jesus on us, we'll be judged. The ones he don't, they've already passed into a very bad place. And tell the people that if they do not go out and vote for Christian values, they are doomed. And if they go out and vote against Christian values, they're doomed. And that's my comment, and thank you.
All right, John, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. All right, I'm going to try to work in one more call here real quickly. Let's go to Jonathan in Virginia. Jonathan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm not. I was calling to let you know that my pastor did encourage us to go out and vote this week. He actually brought up, I believe it's in Daniel, that says that God will put up kings and take down kings, and it really only matters on who you vote on if you're going to be voting with God or against God.
Well, and I think the way you determine that are those who embrace principles and policies that are in line or, you know, closer to what God instructs us to do. And he doesn't leave us without understanding. I mean, the scripture, if we're willing to open the Word of God and study it, we can see very clearly those principles and what they are. And then, as so many today have said that their pastors have done and said, vote according to those guidelines. That's the measuring mark. That's the plumb line. That is the benchmark. That's what we measure by. Jonathan, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. And thanks to all the pastors who have not neglected this aspect of their equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry, of being fully engaged Christian citizens who are informed and involved, knowing how to vote, not necessarily, you know, the person, but the principles. How do they make these decisions? And then encouraging them to do so. All right, folks, I do hope that you will be praying through the night. We're actually having a prayer chain at my church, 24 hours leading into the election. I hope you'll be praying tomorrow, praying for the turnout, praying for the outcome, praying for our nation. But make sure you make plans now. Before you turn in for the night, I hope you make plans as to what time you'll be voting tomorrow. And then be sure and mark your calendar or your time for 5 o'clock tomorrow Eastern for Washington Watch. That's right. Until then, do what the Apostle Paul says do. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.